big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
There's so many resources and there's great documentation on all of it. But really for me, it started with being curious, you know, what can I learn from this? I mean, if Netflix and Google and all these other companies can use it, what's different from the AEC firm?
That was a small snippet from our guest for today, Dalton Goodwin, who's a BIM coordinator at DLR Group and a data enthusiast. So this is again an architect slash BIM slash awesome episode. Let's go.
You're about to enter the Ak-Yong Podcast.
Ak-Yong Podcast.
India's first and very own architecture podcast, where you'll hear the insights, experiences, and journeys from India's leading architects. No matter what your skill level is, together we'll build on our knowledge and share architecture's greatest stories ever told. Now, here's your host, Manish Paul Simon.
Hey guys, welcome back to yet another episode of the Ak-Gyan podcast, where you'll get some awesome gyan slash knowledge on architecture, tech, design, and everything related to architecture, which is pretty much everything. In this episode, I'm super stoked to have with us Dalton Goodwin, all the way from Kansas, USA. So he presently works as a BIM coordinator at DLR Group, which is a reputed large architecture and engineering firm with their offices based all around the world. Dalton is also a data enthusiast and he's always found learning, tinkering, or doing something related to machine learning, data science, AI, and anything related to coding during his free time. So in this episode, Dalton talks about his journey and how he got into the AEC industry, how the DLR Group made a smooth transition to working remotely during the pandemic, machine learning and its relation to architecture, his YouTube channel called the BIM Coordinator, the power of data and jobs getting automated, AI in construction, why AEC industry is going to be the coolest industry going forward, and hiring data scientists in AEC firms, and loads more. Do check out Dalton's YouTube channel called the BIM Coordinator, which would be part of the show notes at akgyan.com/47. Let's jump straight to the episode. This is Machine Learning in the AEC Industry with Dalton Goodwin. Let's go.
So I got into the world of BIM kind of on accident. I didn't really know anything about construction or architecture or engineering, but I just knew I wanted to do something else. I kind of had a goal of doing something in construction or whatnot. I, you know, had been working in manufacturing for a couple of years, but went into a college and I think they had some postings of just different CAD openings just right in the area. And I was like, well, that looks really cool. I'll see what that's about. And so I kept looking at it and thought, okay, this would, you know, doing that would allow me to maybe be a little bit more flexible with my schedule. I could potentially work from home, which, you know, in these circumstances has worked out really well. Mm-hmm. But the first few classes started to go, it was really cool because I loved it. I'm like, this is awesome. I'm like, people get to do this all the time. Nice. I'm like, and ever since then, it's just grown exponentially for me. I've tried to network with many people, learn as much as I can all the time. And then I think while I was in school, I got a CAD drafting position. And then I was lucky enough that right after I graduated that I was able to get a BIM lead role, which essentially was a BIM coordination role with a little bit some model or like BIM technician type stuff. But I landed on a few large projects, and from there, you know, was kind of thrown, you know, straight into it. And there was a lot of things I had to learn, but, from there it's been, you know, nonstop. So, and then it wasn't until I left that position, to work at it was kind of a smaller firm, and it wasn't, multidisciplined, but it wasn't, didn't have a construction side to it. But, I worked with one of my mentors, Bill Carney, and he was, he's a big advocate for technology. And, I started to pick up, I kind of was messing with Python a little bit. I started to pick it up more at that position and started to dive more into, machine learning, more or less. Like I knew I wanted to do something with data. It's just like, but I wanted to do something more than, what I saw some of the other folks doing, just something different. And then machine learning kind of showed up on my radar, and I'm like, oh, okay, this seems like, you know, it has incredible benefits to our industry. I mean, as much data as we generate every day, there's got to be, you know, some great, insights we can learn from our, data, things that we could do better, you know, through learning through the data. And so, I just started down that journey, and that was about a year ago or so. So that's kind of how I got into, to BIM and machine learning. So.
All right. So my question to you was, you know, like coming from a background, which is not, related to construction, how overwhelming was it working with guys who, you know, professionals or architects in the field?
Yeah. So it was quite a bit overwhelming. Just because the college I went to was, it was just a 2-year program, and it was accelerated. So I had, you know, the foundational BIM tools, and I knew how to use them. But when it came to like working directly with architects and their specific issues, sometimes that would be overwhelming. And that's why I think, you know, a lot of what I had, you know, had to do and still have to do is just, you know, ask questions and try my best to troubleshoot things. You know, you become good at Googling things or knowing what to search for and find. And that process gets easier. But, you know, I would say that I was quite a bit overwhelmed because it was one of the first projects I got on was a multidiscipline, it was fully integrated. We were also doing the construction management for the project. So there was a lot of moving pieces, and being, you know, like one of the only BIM people on that project, it was a lot. And but I learned so much doing it, and you just have to be open and communicate with folks and kind of get, you know, tell them, you know, where, you know, what it is that you need to know, or if you need help, you need to, you know, be able to reach out to people. Luckily I had a good mentor while I was working there that kind of helped me through a lot of those things that I had troubles with, or I didn't exactly know what to do.
Right. And were you part of the architecture side of things, or was it like a mix of, you know, structure, plumbing, or electrical?
Yeah. So my first goal was to, in school, I knew I wanted to kind of focus on BIM, and I wanted to know holistically how everything tied together. Right. So and part of my program was like, it was like a BIM CAD type program. And we focused on like a variety of different, you know, MEPs, the mechanical, electrical, everything. And I knew I wanted to see how everything came together from, you know, a high level. So my first goal was to go, apply for or work for a multidiscipline, you know, in some integrated firm, And luckily I started right out of school. And they did everything, architecture. They were a big E firm. They had more engineers than anything. But we also had structural engineers, and then we also had the construction management side. So I learned so much from that, because, you know, I got to see from, you know, concept to essentially a built building. I mean, we worked through, the construction process, you know, process. And that's pretty much the only firms I've been at. The firm that I currently work at, they don't have a construction side, but they are a multidiscipline firm. So we have almost every discipline.
All right, great. And tell us more about how you started this YouTube channel called the BIM Coordinator, and what made you decide to, you know, share your knowledge.
Yeah. So it kind of started in school, and I knew I wanted to learn as much as I could about the tools. And so I thought, okay, well, if I created a channel, I could at least share, you know, some of the information that I do learn, but also it would help me in becoming maybe a better presenter. Cause I would have to somewhat think about the process of, how to do something if I'm going to record it and share it. So it started there, and it's, you know, even now it's still, I'm still working on those skills. I mean, I don't actually spend a lot of time prepping any of them. It's more or less like, I'm working through the day and somebody asks, you know, me some very unique question. I'm like, oh, okay, right, that would be cool to share. And so nice. I would, almost record it on the spot. So it's, you know, it's, I use it to help me learn, to become a better presenter on those tools, a better teacher, and then also to hopefully help some folks out. You know, if they're troubleshooting, they could, you know, hopefully land on one of my videos that answers their questions or whatnot. So,
and also you can use it as a reference to go back to it, right, in case you forget stuff and all that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I did a video on that. I need to watch my own video. Yeah. I mean, that's happened a few times. So.
All right, great. Could you briefly tell us about, you know, what the role of a BIM coordinator entails, and what are the different job roles or scope of work that you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so my position is kind of different than maybe a typical BIM coordinator, because I kind of take care of the Southeast region for the firm, and that's about 6 offices. And so I don't get in the, you know, necessarily the day-to-day stuff, you know, the day-to-day BIM stuff. I'm, you know, more or less, you know, I'll support BIM kickoffs. You know, planning out the process, outlining some of that stuff, trying to find better ways to implement technology. And sometimes that just starts with a conversation. So like, hey, you know, we could do that with Dynamo. That, you know, that would be a really easy thing to do, and you'll save, you know, tons of hours. And then from there, it's proactively monitoring the project through some of the tools that we have of just extracting the data. And then from there, we can, you know, somewhat understand if there's potential issues where we need to step in or whatnot. And then from there, you know, trainings and whatnot. If team members need trainings, or if we do identify that there's bad modeling practices or something, you know, we either leverage some of the training resources we have, or we do those over-the-shoulder one-on-one trainings with folks. You know, monitoring BIMX plans, things like that. You know, even, you know, during the BIMX plan, we may set up like Navisworks, or we'll plan out some stuff for doing clash detection or some type of process. And so some of those things fall on my head to do. But for the most part, we're almost like a technology safety net for the team. So we're there for support. If they have questions, if they have specific BIM related things, we're there for support for the team. Well, you know, ultimately that's kind of what we're there for. So.
All right. And How are you guys coping during this pandemic, you know, working from home and still managing to get stuff done?
Yeah, so it was crazy at first. And we worked quite a bit the first week when, you know, everybody was, you know, being recommended to work from home. And we were lucky enough to have a really great technology team. And we all focused really heavily on making sure that everybody within the firm can work from home with limited issues. A big process for us was getting all the projects that weren't already on BIM 360 migrated to BIM 360.
Right.
And we have hundreds of projects. So, it was a long, process, but we were able to get everything practically moved. And now, you know, folks have almost no issues working from home. So, it's been actually really good. We've had a lot of good comments come back to us about, how well the technology is working from home. In some instances, they say it works better from home. So that's,
oh, nice.
That's really good. Yeah, but it's actually went really well. So.
And do you feel that your company would make you guys work from home for the rest of, even after the pandemic is done?
I would imagine they'll be a little bit more flexible with it. I see that as happening. I mean, especially now, I mean, it forced us into that situation, but I'm sure a lot of folks have seen the benefits in having the ability to work from home now. So we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. The most important thing is having good internet and a really good system, right?
Yeah. Some folks, cause there's a few people that, that's not the case. And yeah, I mean, that's a huge headache, you know, for them where when you're on a call and it's cutting out every second and they can't get into Revit, but yeah, I mean, that'll probably be the number one thing.
All right. And could you briefly tell us about, you know, take one project and what's the BIM cycle of that project? Like from the, you know, conceptual stage, till the completion of the project and also facilities management after that?
Yeah. So for me, BIM kind of starts off, or where the project starts off with the BIM execution plan.
Right.
And then we plan and identify tech and dates and stuff for different things, work through schematic design, then DDs and CDs, and then we'll have you know, we'll work through the CA phase as well, and I'll you know, I'll be a support person during that cycle, and then, you know, we'll do the BIM setup, you know, project or Revit models and whatnot, you know, but more or less it's just, you know, I'm monitoring from a high level,
nice.
Finding ways to better integrate technology. And then when it gets to facility management, we have some projects where we're actually building some of the FM portions of it. And what's cool is there's a lot of data within that, that we can learn from how people use a building, how people operate that building, and then, you know, we can take that information and then hopefully learn on how to make better buildings, more
exactly.
optimized buildings. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's, you know, it starts at schematic or whatever phase. I mean, it's, you know, when do they need support and whatnot. Some teams need more of it, some need somewhat less, but for me, you know, BIM's always there. We leverage Revit from the, you know, straight out of the gate. We're
nice.
We're, you know, using Revit, and we use Revit, I think, on every single project that we have. There are some teams that do use CAD, but they're migrating over. So, you know, right off the bat, you know, we're supporting those efforts, building templates, optimizing the workflows and stuff. So,
awesome. And in a way, you're also figuring out where you could improve the efficiency by leveraging Dynamo or Python and create a system which is, you know, make it faster to get the project done or the documentation done, right?
Yeah, and what's cool is with Dynamo, it's like sometimes it's just during a conversation with somebody, you identify something that could potentially be automated in some way. Or what's really cool with Python is that it essentially can do anything. You know, we can automate a lot of things outside of Revit itself. And what's neat is, there's a ton of different tools out there that help with that, that stuff. But yeah, I mean, it starts with a conversation, and then we look at it and like, okay, well, this thing, you know, this process that you guys do on every project could, you know, potentially be automated, and we quantify those numbers and we see how much time we save. But yeah.
All right. And, you know, getting into the space, the transition is like from CAD to Revit, then Python, Dynamo. And now you do like a transition to something bigger, you know, like machine learning and I don't know, even eventually AI. So how steep has the learning curve been for you after you got into this field?
The field in itself, BIM, is there's a lot of things involved. And I've tried to specialize in certain things, you know, really focus on like Revit, Navisworks, Bluebeam, and Python, and Dynamo. Really focus on those tools. And even in those, you know, I try to focus more on Python and Dynamo and Revit. Because there's just so much capabilities within those tools, and to really leverage them, you have to understand how to use them. And so it's been a long journey on trying to truly learn them. And I still am. There's a lot of stuff I don't know, especially with machine learning. Because machine learning in itself, sometimes I think is oversimplified from folks that are looking from the outside in. And machine learning is an incredibly complex field, and it's not just a subset of like AI, but it reaches into almost every other subset of AI, robotics, everything. I mean, everything that AI has to offer, ML almost plays a role, some type of role in that. So it's incredibly vast. And so what I've tried to do is, at least if I'm leveraging ML, to focus in on leveraging it with AEC, starting small, you know, looking at linear regression, leveraging that just to predict small things like, square footage to profitability, stuff like that, just to start to see the power of it. And then hopefully from there, it'll grow into eventually, I would imagine, you know, we could build buildings at least a lot quicker, almost recommending us, you know, specific things. Yeah,
definitely. I feel like machine learning would definitely get integrated with the industry. Like, for example, now Revit 2021 came out with an option for generative design, right? Yeah. So I feel like in the future, they would eventually have a tool for machine learning as well. Or a plugin.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I would imagine a lot of those, I guess it all depends on what Autodesk is tracking or whatnot, but machine learning is just it's taking statistics, applying it to data with a computer pretty much. Yeah. And it's really everything that we do is a data point, and generative design and whatnot isn't any different. I mean, if we can understand, if anything, start to leverage generative design and start to look at what is it that we choose and don't choose? I mean, that in itself is another data point that we can start to learn. So I would imagine, that ML will start to be more integrated into a lot of the platforms that we use.
Yeah. And machine learning as a term sounds very cool, right? But how do you actually leverage it? What are the different tools, or like, how do you bring it into the industry? Like, what are the steps to get into the space?
Yeah. So the cool thing is there's a lot of open source tools like Python. some of the libraries within Python is like scikit-learn. That's primarily the one I use. And then there's pandas and numpy, which are some of the more common libraries. But a lot of those are open source. I mean, anybody can jump into them and start using them. There's a ton of resources out there, free and paid. And you know, you can just, I mean, you, if you just search machine learning course or something, you'll find it. Machine learning Python. I mean, there's so many resources and there's great documentation on all of it. But really for me, it started with being curious, you know, what can I learn from this? I mean, if Netflix and Google and all these other companies can use it, what's different from the AEC firm? You know, can we use it to make better decisions, you know, in our day-to-day roles? But and so it starts with there, and then you know, one really great tool that I think is anybody that's interested in getting into ML and wants to just play around with it, Microsoft Azure Machine Learning Studio,
right,
which is just it's pretty much like Dynamo in the way, well, the interface is somewhat alike. I mean, you're messing with nodes, you're plugging stuff in, and then you're kind of testing it out and seeing it from there. And then if you want to drill down into it a little bit further into some of the other meta parameters or whatnot that some ML models have, then Python might be a route. But to at least get, you know, your feet wet with it, then Microsoft Azure ML is an awesome tool. I mean, it allows you to just kind of test out different processes. And what's cool is you can also host it on the websites and then leverage it that way, and then have people input things and then see an output, which is really cool.
Nice. And yeah, and you've created a LinkedIn article called the ultimate resource, right, for data, and Dalton's ultimate resource, where you share like a bunch of tutorials and websites. Oh, yeah. So that's pretty useful as well.
Yeah, and I've been trying to focus more on my YouTube channel on machine learning stuff and data in general. Just, you know, how can we learn from it and the different things that we can do. So there's definitely going to be more of that happening. And then that article you referenced, it has a ton of different stuff, some really great resources for anybody that's interested in ML, you know, folks that can teach it a lot better than I can. So I definitely recommend anybody to check that out.
Yeah, have you completed like all those courses mentioned there? Because like it's quite a lot, right?
I think I completed. I haven't looked at the list since, but I know I've completed. Because I think I mentioned I was working on a few of them, and I think I'm completed those. But some of the books, like the 100-page machine learning book,
yeah,
it's that one. I'm still going through it. It's more or less I use it as a reference, but I don't know. I get so fascinated with learning new things and new technologies, and I'll see a new course. I'm like, oh man, I need to do this. And then I kind of go down that route, but I always try to refocus and since then though, I have done a lot more, I've watched a lot more. So I'll probably be updating that article at some point. So.
Right. Great. And could you give us any examples of, you know, how how your company, for example, is leveraging machine learning, or other companies are leveraging machine learning in the AEC industry?
Yeah, so our company is kind of limited in it. I know Bechtel is using machine learning on some of their projects just to learn. And I think they're more or less a construction company. But to learn where some of the more high-risk areas are. I mean, they can take the data points and learn from that. And then, you know, there's plenty of companies that are doing things like that, more or less some of the larger folks that can invest in those type of resources. But we, what's cool is the firm that I work at has been, we see the power of data. Now, I wouldn't say that we're leveraging machine learning yet, But we're really working on trying to consolidate all the data across every platform into one location. And from there, we can start to pull from it, at least start to, you know, first step, create some dashboards and whatnot, and then migrate to, you know, predictive analytics and really learning from that information through machine learning. But so we're not fully leveraging it, but there are some cool companies out there like Alice AI, which, you know, is a simulation platform. There's Dynamo, or the extension for Dynamo, which uses, I think, a classification model,
right,
to help predict nodes and stuff. So I mean, there's a lot of cool things out there. You know, there's image recognition stuff that a lot of construction firms use. So I mean, it's growing. There's some robotic companies like the Brick Laying Machine. I mean, robotics in itself is a subset of AI, but, and I would imagine they're using some type of machine learning in their process. But yeah,
nice. And do you feel like, you know, we do a lot of documentation and drafting with a lot of clicks, and do you feel that with machine learning it could study the way you draft stuff and then eventually create or automate it at a later date, like as a potential?
Yeah, I think it could. I mean, you know, why not? Because like, if we can, as humans, learn something, you know, in that way, sometimes, like, we can watch somebody, you know, do picks and clicks, and then we can learn from that process. I mean, all of that's information. It may be a little bit harder to do in some, you know, some instances, but, you know, if we can understand what it is somebody's doing, then, and then have a database of almost other possibilities or processes, and then it identifies where things can tie into, or like, hey, this process could be automated. I mean, I do that on a day-to-day basis. You know, I'll see somebody doing something that's incredibly tedious. And so I'll step in and say, hey, we could maybe use Dynamo to do this. Or, hey, you know, we have this add-in that pretty much does that for you. So it's all data points. And I would imagine ML could learn from that and then apply those processes or recommend certain things to folks, you know, before I even have to step in or, you know, before I even see that process. So.
Yeah, but don't you feel that a lot of people would start losing jobs because their work gets automated?
I don't know. I mean, in most cases, you know, every huge evolution of, you know, with technology, folks have gotten, you know, I mean, we've gotten better, you know, there's been more jobs created, but I don't know, with machine learning, if it's optimized to the level, I mean, I would imagine if we get to something like general intelligence, then, I would think a lot of jobs would be automated.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like that's quite a ways off. I mean, currently it's we're leveraging it to essentially make better decisions, be better architects or engineers or BIM coordinators, identify issues before they happen, streamline that effort. I mean, if anything, there is a shortage in the AEC world of
exactly folks. Yeah.
So it'll fill those gaps in. So
yeah, and when you compare the AEC industry to other industries like the airlines or even for cars, right? We're not being as innovative as them, and only now are we seeing a steep incline in terms of innovation, right?
Yeah, it's pretty bad in comparison to some of those. I mean, I worked in manufacturing for a couple of years. I mean, we were leveraging, I mean, it was a transition for me to move from that into the AE world, because in there, everything was planned. I mean, you knew what your profits were and what your, you know, threshold for error was. I mean, you knew those numbers. You knew what the typical downtime was, because those are all data points. You knew what you knew the process, but what was neat was the company I worked for was always, you know, they were big on optimizing that process as much as possible. So if there was ever a way to make it better, they were open to ideas. But, you know, robotics were being leveraged in there. But in those things are, you know, that's easier to an extent. Construction is so complex because, you know, every site, every project is different almost. So, you know, for a robot or something to learn how projects come together is really hard because it's not necessarily a controlled project, you know, it's not controlled. The environment's not controlled. The cool thing is there's a lot of folks working on technologies like that that can work close to humans in the way that it, you know, doesn't need sensors. It has just pressure sensors or whatnot. That it, if it hits anybody, it kind of shuts off. There's some cool things that people are building to hopefully be used on job sites. But I mean, I see a future where we're using like a job site's almost, you know, it's, I think there's a manufacturing practice like lights out manufacturing where right. essentially the entire facility is ran by robots. I almost see construction moving that way. I mean, it's a cross between, I guess, prefab and then on site, but I would imagine, you know, it'll get to a point where we can build it. I mean, that's quite a ways away, but.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like 20, 30 years back, people used to say that this technology would never happen, and now it's already there, right? So we don't know what's going to happen like 10, 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, my mindset on it is that anything's possible. I mean, anything. Like, there isn't and nothing that is impossible. It just, it's, you know, sometimes it's just a little bit further out there than maybe what's practical. But, you know, almost anything's possible. So,
yeah, it would be cool to see AGI before our lifetimes, right? That would be, like, ultimate.
Yeah, I would be super excited to see that. I mean, I don't know what the outcomes would be. it's hard to say, but it would be interesting to definitely. So I'm hoping it doesn't turn into the Terminator or anything. But, you know, there's a lot of different theories. But I think I don't know. I'm kind of I'm hoping that we'll see something. I think, what is it, Ray Kurzweil predicted 2050 or 2040. So we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, probably live like the Jetsons as well.
Yeah, just press a button every day. All right, my job's done.
But in a way, that's also like, I mean, philosophically, you know, like you, distancing yourself from Earth and the natural materials, like you're more in a box. Architecture can have an influence on how you live, right? So I don't know if you're going to live in boxes or is it going to be more of, you know, fluidic forms, or I don't know how it is going to be in the future.
To me, I feel like if we have all this data, I mean, the whole idea is that it's going to be optimized for humans and we don't necessarily... you know, at least personally for me, I don't, you know, like living in a box or some of those, you know, like what a robot would probably be stored in or something. But if anything, all the data points that we get, I mean, there's a lot of nuanced things to this because it's like, you know, at what point are you kind of stepping over, you know, and getting invasive with the data that you're tracking. But I think it's interesting to think about, if anything, that if we can track everything, I mean, how somebody moves through a space, how do they use that space? Are they truly, you know, if it's a learning space, are they truly learning in that area? Are they, you know, what is their mood changing when they walk into specific rooms? Is it because of the color of the room or the shape? You know, start to learn from that and then tweak design. I mean, you can almost have a optimized design for that, you know, if it's your home, an optimized design for you. But again, you know, that that level of data would be, I don't know, to me, incredibly invasive. I wouldn't want something tracking at that level. But then again, you think of Facebook. I mean, it understands, I mean, a lot about how an individual thinks, you know, from the what they post. And so there's, you know, so it'll be interesting to see how architecture evolves.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, definitely. Like, we have this upper hand of thinking abstractly and, you know, I mean, we don't have like a set of data, right? We process things as it comes. So it's going to be interesting, like how technology is going to make sense of data and whether it can also start thinking abstractly in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, because even, I mean, even I think they've had some robots with a little bit of machine learning integrated with them for looking at a set of like paintings. So they have a whole data set of paintings, and then from those paintings it learns to paint on its, you know, it learns to uniquely paint images, but yet it's still leveraging data, and I think it's still controlled in some type of fashion. But I guess it's not much different than like how humans, you know, work. I mean, we learn from past experiences, and then from there we grow those into other experiences and stuff. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it actually depends on how big the canvas is. Like for example, Go chess. I think AI Go, I'm not really sure what the name is, where it learned by, you know, practicing Go from scratch, and then it got better and better and better till it eventually mastered it and then beat the grandmasters or the best in the best, right?
Well, that's like, what is that? Semi-supervised learning, or I can't remember the exact term, but it'll learn through feedback and stuff when it's going through an issue and then continuously get better at it, which is so fascinating. I haven't had a chance to really dive into that kind of stuff, but to be able to learn, you know, go through a process, learn from that process, and then progressively get better at it. It's really interesting. Because there's just so many things I think that could be applied to. So, but we'll see.
Yeah, but those are sort of far-fetched. But what I see in the coming few, I think it's already out there where you can control your house with a Revit model, like a complete, level 3 model where you can like press buttons on your Revit model and goes off in the real world, right?
Oh, like click a button and then it creates the entire house.
Yeah, like switch on lights and...
Okay. So like a facility. So it's just managing all the different IoT devices.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely possible, because I think that's, you know, that's kind of what we do with facility management. I mean, we can track all the information. So from there, it's just, you know, if it's tying it into BIM 360 ops or I think Dasher is a facility manager. I'm not sure, but I mean, that's all information. That's all IoT devices. So yeah, I mean, you can tie and learn from what's cool from what I think is that we could learn from that information. So, you know, how are people using a space and stuff? I mean, like one cool thing is like, if you set up a sensor inside of a conference room, I mean, just, you know, use the lights or whatever. Are people using these spaces? Or like, you know, if you do have lights in it, you know, are people turning the lights on when they use these spaces, or what's the heat in here? So
yeah
I mean, I've tried to think about that, because I have some Arduino IoT device things, different sensors and stuff, and you know, if I could tie them up around my house and try to optimize my day, that would be kind of cool. But yeah,
definitely. Like, I feel technology is like part of the answer towards sustainability. Where, you know, like even where you build a BIM model, you have like multiple BIM models, and then you can, it helps to monitor a smart city, or like, you know, or make decisions which would affect the cities, which would make it more efficient, which would make it more sustainable, right?
Yeah, I would think. And I think there's some tools out there. If it was Autodesk Insight or whatnot, that may recommend different different systems or different things to help optimize a building. So some of those things are out there. I'm sure there's a lot more that I'm not thinking about. And then when it comes to construction sites, it's like planning a project. If we can use AI or ML to better plan projects, or yeah, I mean, same thing when it comes to like selecting resources or like planning out the construction of a project. And that's where I think, I mean, that could be a combination of ML and just a database of recommending different things. I mean, it could be that when you place a wall here's a building, maybe we need to reorient it on a site to get better sunlight or different things like that. Some of that's just information, and it could be store. I mean, I'm pretty sure Autodesk Insight does some stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I think that's somewhat of the goal, is to be able to make better decisions, be more lean, more efficient, and then, you know, that, you know, ultimately, hopefully, just become, you know, the architecture industry. Because I think construction and architecture, or construction in itself, I mean, it weighs so much. It wastes a huge portion of materials. Yeah. There's just a lot of things involved. And if you can really optimize that process, I mean, really make it lean, I mean, you can definitely, impact like, pollution and stuff. I mean, you could reduce it by quite a bit.
Yeah, and hopefully there would be a larger influx of data science geeks and those machine learning experts into our industry, right?
Yeah, and what's so cool is our industry is like merging. And I've thought about this for a while, because, you know, when I first got into, or my first job out of school, I had already been messing with a game engine. I'm like, well, you know, and now that's a huge thing. Everybody's, you know, Twin Motion, which is, I think, built on top of Unreal. And now it's like we have architects. Architects has been in the field for 10, 15 years that are learning Unity. And this is like, and same for like machine learning and data science. We're actually looking at hiring a data scientist for the firm I work for. And, so that we can, you know, leverage that industry. And there's so, it's funny because we have an entire group within the firm I work for of, Power BI specialists, or people right. that are really interested in data. So you see a merging of that. There's just so many different things merging into one another, or we're just starting to adopt some of those practices. So it's really interesting.
Yeah. And especially like, I don't necessarily think that, you know, a lot of architects right now, I think most of the people who work in these firms or the BIM scene are architects and consultants. But like in my previous episode, I had a game developer who got into BIM. I'm sure like a lot of people from other industries would get into this space.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, you don't, unlike architecture, you don't need like a, a 4-year degree and to continue, or a license or anything like that. So you don't need some of those things. So those are barriers into getting into the space. I mean, if you want to leverage BIM, you could, if you have a passion and you just want to learn, then yeah. I mean, I would imagine that we're going to get so many different people, especially, I mean, to me, BIM is really cool. And if we could get the information out there, more and more folks will see this is a really cool industry to get into. I mean, yeah. There's so many things you can do. You're not stuck doing the same thing. You learn. I mean, every project's different. Every possibility is different. It's, there's just so many things.
Yeah. And as an architect, it's scary, but also exciting at the same time.
Yeah. I think some are more scared than others. And then, some are incredibly excited and are on the forefront of technology. I mean, they see, we're starting to see the benefit of it. I mean, if anything, you could look at it like we haven't excelled, in comparison to those other industries when it comes to efficiency. So, in some senses, we need to make up for that. So, it's just a natural thing to to, you know, to progress and grow, and, you know, to look at new ways of doing things. There's, you know, nothing wrong with that. And some folks are just a little bit, you know, a little bit more scared of doing those things. So, and that's the cool thing. Part of my job from the technology side and is, you know, and the team I work for is that, you know, we have to be good, somewhat of good people. You know, we have to be good with people, and we have to, you know, we have to try to understand where they're coming from, understand their specific issues, so that when we try to integrate a technology or we bring a new technology on board, we say, okay, well, these are the benefits. These are the things. Hey, I know you have these issues, and these are some of the things that you can do to, you know, to make your day a little bit easier. It's just really understanding what truly is their problems and then trying to leverage technology in that way. I mean, you have to know how to communicate with those folks. And sometimes it takes longer to get people on board. But I would say a lot of, BIM coordination, I'm working on projects, I'm talking with the folks that are doing these projects day to day, you know, the day to day work. So it's like, what are your problems? I mean, just when you know that you're there to support, you know, you can, you know, they're more open and stuff. So, but ultimately you just have to be good at communicating. So.
Yeah. And I feel like the bigger firms have the upper hand, and, you know, unless you don't innovate and grow, you're going to die off in a couple of years, right?
Yeah, I've heard that, you know, quite a bit. And I'm sure it's hard to say. I'm not sure of how many firms have died off. I know a few, but I mean, it's natural, especially, you know, I think for a long time it hasn't, you know, the fact that we haven't, when it comes to technology and efficiency, grown that much, you know, people that weren't adopting could keep up, you know, okay, if they were years behind. But I mean, now things are things are going to start to grow a lot faster, and those firms that do start to integrate Dynamo, start to integrate machine learning and all these different platforms and truly optimize their process, make it more efficient and effective, then I mean, they're just going to be a lot, you know, way further than some of those other firms. And at that point, I would imagine that, I mean, it's either adopt or your firm's going to die out. I mean, that's just, you know, what's going to happen.
Yeah, but it also depends on the type of projects that you want to do. I mean, if it's more personal with a client, then I feel the natural discretion of the architect comes into the picture more than the technology. Yeah. All right. Great, Dalton. So I think we had a nice session for very interesting to talk about the past, present, and also the future. So thanks for coming on. We'll quickly jump to the quickfire round. I'll ask you a couple of questions and then we'll wrap it up.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. So which book has inspired you the most?
I read books all the time. I'm a big... big book reader, and then also I listen to a lot of Audible, but I would say Factfulness is a really interesting book because it talks about some of the things that we think we know about the world, and how, you know, a lot of times it's untrue what we think we know. And I think that it's interesting perspective on like data and how to leverage data. And then Extreme Ownership is a really cool book. I think it's a really nice book for folks that are working with teams. It's just an awesome one. And I think he also has another book that I haven't read yet. I would also want to mention that the BIM Handbook,
right?
That book is really cool. There's so many different ones, but what I like about that one is it talks about a lot of different things, but what's really interesting to me is the case studies, because I think if we're going to get better, we have to learn from, you know, all these different projects and how, what made them great. And what's cool about that book is it does have some great case studies, and you can see the technologies they used on different projects.
All right. And what's on your playlist right now?
Like music?
Yeah, like
or books. On Audible, I have Predictive Analytics, which I need to read, and then like 20 other books that are sitting there. So, but yeah, that's sitting there right now.
So you're a guy who is like constantly learning, right? So, but how do you like, I mean, I'm sure there would be like a burnout in between. So like, how do you stress yourself or de-stress?
Oh, I do get somewhat like a small burnout after a while, because I'm like, all right, I need to take a break. This is going, because I have a son. So, you know, he kind of, you know, he forces me to quit, because I'm like, I can't, you know, I can't be 24/7 BIM. So I, you know, I try to structure my day a little bit more, quit at certain times. Hang out with my son. We'll do different stuff, and eventually we'll take a vacation. And because I really love it. It's my passion, so it's somewhat not hard to learn all the time. And that's part of like the role. I mean, I get unique questions almost every day where I have to Google something just to figure it out. So yeah.
All right. I'm sure you traveled a lot. So like, which city would you consider your favorite?
I actually haven't traveled very much at all. Okay. I have only gone to a few places, and I would say St. Louis. I mean, I like it a lot because it's where I grew up. So, but St. Louis is my favorite.
All right. Were there any mentors in your life who's had like a profound influence and, Yeah.
I've had a number of mentors. I was lucky that in St. Louis there's an awesome Revit user group, and I started to attend it while I was in school and met Bill Carney and Brian Myers.
Nice.
Bill Carney, he works at DLR Group with me. He's my boss.
Nice.
And then
I watched a lot of Brian's videos on LinkedIn, and
oh yeah, his are great. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome having him as a leader at DLR Group, because he can do, you know, he's smart. I mean, he knows the ins and outs of this world. He knows the technology, and that's what's great, is he's a leader that, you know, knows the technology in some cases better than a lot of people. So and then Brian Myers is really awesome. I think he has a lot of LinkedIn videos as well, but he, you know, they've both, you know, Bill's pushed me a lot because he's he works, you know, we've worked together, and he's been a great mentor, because I see what he can do. I'm like, oh man, I hope I could do as much as he can, you know, one day. And then Brian Myers, I haven't got to work with him directly, but he's an awesome guy. I think he works currently at Jacobs.
Right.
And he knows a ton of stuff. So I was able to get so much advice from him. I would send him emails like all the time. After, you know, when I got out of school and I was working at this sub consultant, or subcontractor, I would send him, you know, like, hey, what is this? So what is BIM? Or like, how do I, you know, get into BIM management or BIM coordination or anything? And I mean, he's helped me out so much. So those two guys, Bill Carney and Brian Myers.
Yeah. And the surprising thing, I mean, I have this stereotype, you know, like where only the youngsters can get in the tech space and like do like crazy stuff. But Brian Myers and all these other guys just blow it away. Like, dude, even I can do it, man.
Yeah, there's it's funny, because like every time I think I'm like, all right, I'm really, you know, I've got this, I'm smart, I know, you know, I think I'm in a good spot, and then I watch some video of some like incredibly complex process, I'm like, oh crap, I don't even know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Like, I need to learn so much, and you know, that's this industry, there's just so much to learn and so many things, and I think that's what makes it really interesting and fun. Awesome.
All right, Dalton, and what does your daily routine in your life look like? I mean, what was it before, you know, the pandemic happened?
Well, okay. So before the pandemic, it would be, you know, getting up, going to work. Well, before that, dropping my son off at school, going to work, and then I would get out. I mean, during the day, it's working on a variety of different projects, maybe doing some type of training or something. And then from there, picking my son up, and then we would go to the gym.
Oh, nice.
And that was pretty much like the only time I got out was I would go to the office and the gym. And now, you know, it's total lockdown, but you know, and after that, it's just have dinner and then maybe if I have time, read a few things or get online and make a YouTube video or something, and then go to bed.
Nice. And how's your son coping during the pandemic? I mean, it must be stressful for him, right?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, he's really bored. I mean, he's played all the video games, you know. He's getting quite bored, but we're pushing through it. Hopefully it ends soon. So
yeah, hopefully. All right. And my last question to you is, what future plans do you have? I mean, I'm guessing the natural transition is a BIM manager, but apart from that, like 10 years from now.
Yeah. Tell you the truth, I don't know if the transition I want is to go into BIM management. But, you know, in 10 years with my passion for data and machine learning, I'm hoping to migrate into a role where I'm leveraging, you know, BIM in itself is data. I mean, Revit essentially is a database. I mean, if we look at it, so is practically anything else. But I want to be able to, I think, leverage data and really, you know, start to build tools and interfaces and different things where we can start to make better decisions with that data, truly understanding the, you know, complexities of information. So I'm hoping to eventually get into a role. I don't know if that's 5-10 years off. It's hard to say, but if anything, I mean, that's where my passions lie. So I see that kind of being the same in the future, but we'll see.
Yeah. And, you know, personally for me, I would prefer working remotely, you know, anywhere from the planet on projects, anywhere. So do you feel that same scenario would fall for you as well, where you get to work in Europe and probably do a project, hopefully in India as well?
Yeah, I'm a single parent. So for me, having the ability to work remotely would be pretty awesome because I could go anywhere if I wanted to. And then, you know, and that's partly why I got into this field, was having the ability to work from home from time to time. And I think after this, you know, a lot of folks are going to see the benefit of doing that. I'm sure there's a lot of people that it hasn't changed their mind, but for me, you know, because even I was kind of, you know, I didn't know if I would be as effective or efficient working from home, but I would say I'm just, if anything, I'm more efficient. You know, I don't have to drive, I don't have to do a lot of that random stuff. I mean, part of it's because everything's shut down, but you know, I don't have to go to an office. You know, I have a setup here, and it works out really well. So we'll see. Hopefully, you know, we'll see more remote working adoption. And what's cool with that is anybody can, like, so if you're from Florida and there's a really cool opportunity in California or India or Africa, and it's doing something that you truly like, if your firm if the firm itself allows remote working, they can they have no limitation on who they can hire, because they could hire anybody. They could do, you know, they could, if they needed a data science specialist, they wouldn't need somebody in a specific location. They could just hire the best, you know, they could from California, even if they had no offices there, because of remote working. So,
yeah. And we'll feel like the gig economy where, you know, you get people on contract, the best of the best, get stuff done, move on. I think that would be more of the future, I guess.
Yeah, definitely for from some of those short goals or some contracts. We, you know, I like to see where we migrate when it comes to like data science and stuff like that. We may, you know, use, you know, folks like that, or we may hire, try to hire folks full time for those positions. I am interested to see kind of how that folds out. I know we're trying to hire a full time data scientist, but I would imagine with the tools and everything else, things start to become more streamlined where we don't necessarily have to hire folks like that full time. It could be small contracts here and there to build, you know, specific platforms, things like, you know, just different things.
All right. All right, Dalton. I mean, you're a fun guy to talk to, and I want to keep asking questions, but we need to wrap it up. Thanks for coming to the podcast and giving your time and a lot of value as well. I hope to have you in the future, maybe get into the nitty gritties of things, and hopefully even I would be up speed with machine learning, hopefully. Let's see.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. It was definitely a fun conversation. I love talking about this stuff. So I'm really glad to be on here.
All right. And what's the best way our listeners could get in touch with you in case they want to reach out?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn would probably be the best. Just, you know, send me a request. I accept practically anybody. And just send me, you know, you can send me any message you want. So.
All right. All right, guys, so you'll find all the show notes, how to get in touch with Dalton. Also, do check out his YouTube channel, The BIM Coordinator. There's a lot to learn from that channel. I mean, he provides a lot of value, but he doesn't market it as much. But I'm sure in the future as well, like BIM Coordinator would grow pretty big.
You've been listening to the Ak Young Podcast. We're still building the community. Please share this knowledge with someone you know who could benefit. Just send them to akyoung.com, where you'll find our free newsletter. And for more podcast episodes, search for the show on any major podcasting platform. Don't forget to subscribe where you're listening right now. And if you liked it, leave a rating or review.